Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
I know you know that song, and it's from the classic West Side Story being sung by Cheetah Rivera and other wonderful stars. But the reason I'm opening this segment with that music is because coming up on Monday, March 20th, is the Concert for America Stand Up, Sing Out. Huge in New York, coming to Chicago, could not be more excited. It's going to be at 8 p.m. at the Auditorium Theater at Roosevelt University in an incredible space. It's going to feature Cheetah Rivera, Melissa Manchester, Alice Ripley, Anna Gasteyer, the cast of Hamilton, and three people I'm about to talk to now, all of whom are incredible favorites of mine because all listeners know how into Broadway I am. I live for that and still believe I should have played Tevye on Broadway, but that's just me. So joining us are first of all, the two creators, the producers of this show. And if you are a fan of On Broadway, the Sirius XM channel, Channel 72 on your Sirius XM dial, it is where my dial is frozen in. All the time. Joining me is, and here's my proof that I listen every week, the amazing Seth Rudetsky. There's my proof, Seth.
Ooh, brava.
And his, thank you, brava. And his husband, James Wesley, putting this whole concert together. I'm going to start by welcoming you two, Seth and James. Let me just ask you, what gave you the thought of saying, well, you know what, it's your whole life of helping out and giving back, but why the Concert for America?
Oh, I think part of it was not being depressed on Inauguration Day. I think it kind of started from that. And ultimately, in all honesty, I think it was really about wanting to give people hope and feel like they were connected and not alone, and that there is still a reason to be proud to be an American. And we wanted to put on a show where we did that, and we did. We succeeded, and now we want to do it every month because of what's going on in our country, and we all need to continue feeling that sense of hope, and we're all needed we're all in this together, and that's what the show is about.
And Seth, obviously, look, you're in the public every week. Back after the Orlando tragedy, you guys put together the incredible song "What the World Needs Now" with incredible talent, producing voices for The Voiceless, The Heart and Voices, so many things that you do, and you've been recognized for it. And I should say, both of you guys have also performed and produced all sorts of shows, Ragtime and Disaster and Les Mis and on and on. What does this do for you at the performer end of you, Seth, to bring this kind of activity to the public? What do you hope to trigger in their minds?
You know, I kind of see this as like a refueling station. Every month, I think people are trying to be active, and they're trying to get to charities, or they're trying to post about stuff, and I feel it gets very depleting. So kind of once a month, I feel this is a chance to just hear amazing performances, put yourself in a good mood so you have the energy to continue to be active citizens for the next month. So it's like a big gas station.
With Ethel and everything, right?
Yeah.
All right. And now
exactly.
Right. I'm going to bring into our conversation an Emmy Award winner, one of my favorite actresses. Love this woman. I've interviewed her before when the movie Hannah Free opened in Chicago. You probably know her not only from that and so many other films and television work, but especially Cagney and Lacey. Emmy Award winner Sharon Gless will be part of this show, and she's part of this interview. And Sharon Gless, I love you.
I love you, Paul. Thank you.
So talk to me about, obviously, you're going to be on stage with, you know, Cheetah Rivera, Melissa Manchester. Tell us from your perspective of what's going to happen.
I'm not afraid.
No, they should be afraid of being with the immense talent that will be with them. Oh, I should have mentioned Queer as Folk, by the way, one of my all-time favorite Showtime show, every episode in my library. But anyway, so talk to me about what you'll be doing and what we'll be hearing from some of your colleagues on stage.
Well, I haven't heard my assignments yet, but I know I'll be singing with the group. I did it. Seth and James invited me to join them for Hillary's convention to do What the World Needs Now, and then they invited me to come to New York on Inauguration Day, and it was the most healing thing I think I've ever done in my life. And now I'm going to be going to Chicago. Whenever they invite me, I will show up because I want people to know also that we have not forgotten. It's not like we're getting used to this. And I mean Mr. Trump.
Yeah,
We're not getting used to it, and we're not going to go away. And so every time we show up and we do these things, we raise money. And it's a cool thing. It's just people need to know they haven't been forgotten, we're not forgetting, and we're going to keep coming back.
And, James, I'm sure you know, Mr. Trump did not exactly take Illinois in his venture for the White House. They also, but you may or might not know this, we have a Trump Plaza near the Trump Hotel, and the city council voted to take down his name from the plaza. Not sure if you knew that.
Wow.
Yeah, which means Illinois will be getting no help from the White House, I'm sure. But you know, I know the mission of this is about, you know, creating the importance of faith in the United States, optimism for the future. So this is about raising money, and people will be able to get their tickets for this. I'll give the information again, of course. But what will the money go for, James? What are you going to try and help? It's a series of charities, I know.
There are a series of charities. It's both the money for them, and it's also the awareness, because I think that there's I'll give you the names of the organizations. It's NAACP, the Sierra Club, the National Immigration Law Center, Southern Poverty Law Center, and the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. The thing about these organizations, it isn't just about raising money, it's also about raising awareness. And so the beautiful thing about the show, it's a combination of celebrity, because celebrity is always fun, and we like to see people that we know and love, like Sharon and like Cheetah. And then we have wonderful music. But the third component that's really the heart of the show are everyday people. They're citizens from Chicago. There's going to be a woman on the stage who's going to talk about a very traumatic thing that happened with her regarding domestic violence. We're going to have an undocumented immigrant there who's part of the plaintiff in a lawsuit, and he's been in this country. He was raised in Chicago, but he was born in Mexico, and he's facing deportation. He's been here since he was 4 years old. So it raises the awareness of the organizations and these people that what's going on in our country right now is real. It isn't just about tax cuts. It isn't just about, and I say just, about elimination of the National Endowment for the Arts. It's like people's lives right now that are being affected. And I think it makes it very, how can you not be compassionate and not be motivated, like Seth said, about being refueled, if you're seeing those actual people on the stage telling their stories and then surrounded by music. And, you know, the person, we had someone in February in New York, and he's undocumented, and he emailed me right after the event, and he said it was one of the most amazing healing experiences of his life, was to be able to just stand on that stage and tell his story.
Seth, you know, coming off of 8 years of President Obama, of course, you're coming to his hometown when you come here, and you know, people, they criticized him. And you know, I mean, in fact, Trump said the other day, you know, nobody liked Obama until he left. Now everybody loves Obama. That wasn't quite true. But I get what he's saying, which is now people sort of longing for the good old days. But do you have a sense that the rhythm, the emphasis right now of what's happening in the country, can it be turned around? Is this a train that can't be stopped for the next 4 years or more?
You know, I'm not even looking at it as about Trump or about the administration. I'm really just, these organizations existed before this administration. They're going to exist after. It's just a question of what are we focusing our energy and our money on. And to me, we need to always focus on social justice and helping people. So I feel these organizations need help like they always do, and these people need help like they always do. You know, this woman with the domestic violence, you know, she got herself together, and through the help of this organization, she got herself a master's degree, and now she's working in a prison helping men. So it, to me, it's just about help out these social justice charities, because they're going to pay off no matter who's in power, because they're always going to be disenfranchised people. So I guess my point is, it doesn't even matter to me who's president. I just feel we always need help with the environment, like the Sierra Club, National Association for Advancement of Colored People will always need help because of the years of disenfranchisement that, you know, colored people have gotten, quote unquote. So I just feel we're always going to need these organizations to help us, and these charities are just a way to focus help on them, these events. So So I guess that's my sort of answer but non-answer.
Okay, well, I get it. Sharon, let me ask you, I mean, when I think of just your career and some of the things you've done, and even Cagney and Lacey, probably the most fun and recognizable, but even there, sort of breaking ground because here's two women cops and all of that. But I think of your other work. I think of Queer as Folk, especially Queer as Folk, and Hannah Free.
But
lucky us, because you've selected projects in your career that it's not just about, in my opinion, the money, the whatever. You're using your career to send a message and to make a difference. Is that a fair enough thing to say?
Yes, it is fair enough. I've just been fortunate enough to have been offered those roles. Cagney and Lacey and Queer as Folk changed my life, too. And that's one of the reasons I go out and fight now. I show up in Chicago with my pals, Seth and James. I don't know how to sing. I just sing an octave lower than everybody else. But I just...
It worked for B. Arthur.
It's true. They know that.
Yes.
They know that. That's right. These are organizations that are hopefully going to financially benefit. Yes, they existed before, but I feel they're under attack now. I do... use the word Trump in a negative tone of voice. I fought with Time and Daily, and I fought for women's rights. And now there's I'm old enough to remember when abortion wasn't legal. Hmm. I lived those years. I know what is at stake. And I'm going to keep fucking showing up. Excuse me, are you allowed to say that word on your stage?
We're going to find out.
You said it.
We're going to...
Hit
the button.
Forgive me. I was very fortunate to have both of those roles, and it educated me, and I got to make friends with Seth and James, and I'll just keep showing up. I think that a lot of these charities that will hopefully be benefiting from our performances are being knocked down. That's just my feeling.
Yeah.
And are under attack, and I just want people to know we have not forgotten. We haven't forgotten.
And James, I'll come back to you. I mean, again, you and Seth have been so instrumental in doing so many charitable events and making a difference in these ways. But I'm just curious, when you look at the list of people that just listen to Sharon, you ask me and I will be there, and the list of people we're going to see here, I've said it before, but I'm going to say a couple of names again. Cheetah Rivera, Melissa Manchester, Alice Ripley, Anna Gasteyer. These are not small names in certainly the Broadway community, much less theater, music as well. So, James, what is it? Is there just an incredible trust of that community that says if Seth and James are doing a project, it's going to make a difference and we need to be part of it? Or are there people who say no to you?
Well, I think, no one has said no. A lot of people have said, please ask me again, because I've been busy. Time Daily being one of them, because she was in a show and then she's got another show coming up. But I will add to that we actually have a few people that just signed on that you don't even know, that we don't know. Yuri Sardaroff, who's on, there's so many Dick Wolf shows from Chicago, and he's on Chicago Fire, and Tori DeVito, who's on Chicago Med.
Yes.
Colin Donnell, who was in Anything Goes, that Seth's known, he's also going to be joining us. But as far as Yuri and Tori have to do with them, I just literally went on IMDb Pro and found out their manager, and I saw on social media that they were passionate about social justice, and I wrote to their managers, and their managers passed it on to them. And I said, look, we've created this platform for our artists' friends and for quote-unquote everyday people. Do you want to come? And they said yes. You know, we don't even know them. But I think, you know, obviously it helps knowing that Sharon and Cheetah and Melissa trust us, and Anna and Alice, but they're going to be there. I've never met them before. It's really, that's the exciting thing about doing this, is that friends bring on friends, and then other people hear about it. And there are a lot more of people who want social justice in this country than don't. And that ultimately is what keeps us motivated doing these.
I agree with you. By the way, you could have the host of Politics Tonight here in Chicago singing For Good with Anna Gasteyer. So that would be me.
I figured it was.
I'm going to be in the audience. So if you call me up on stage and say, I know Paul is here somewhere, come on, I'm there. Just going
to
make that offer.
That is really good.
Is it also, is the children's, is there Chicago Children's Choir? Did I read
yes,
that?
Yes, they just signed on too.
Performing?
Yeah, Sharon.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be fabulous. I love that. The young people, everybody's getting involved.
Well, and there's another piece. I don't know if I kind of said this before. I'm going to say it now with a little focus, and Seth, come to you. You actually have a good portion of the cast of Hamilton. I've done a show here. I do a show here called Broadway Backstage, just so you know. So I'm kind of the guy who sits with it. It's sort of a ripoff of Inside the Actor's Studio here in Chicago. So yeah. My most recent show was Hamilton, sitting with that cast and creative. But anyway, including Lin-Manuel, you've got the cast showing up. They do a lot. You probably know this. A lot of charitable and political stuff here on their days off and during the day, register to vote. They're just always out there and active. And Seth, you've got them showing up.
Well, they just said yes right away. And then there's one point person involved with the show that sent out emails to the rest of the cast, and he's been organizing it himself. It's like James said, people want to do social justice, so it's really basically easy to get them if they're available. And the only reason they're not available is if they really have another commitment. But no one's like, oh, I don't really feel like doing it. They either say, yes, I'm available, or, oh, my God, I'm not available. When's the next one? You know,
I mean, don't get us wrong. We haven't asked Scott Baio. You know what I mean?
Scott Baio is not available.
Yeah,
he's not available.
Or Ted Nugent. Will he be providing music at this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I love it. And by the way, Seth, your partner in crime, Christine Petty, who I mentioned to you off air, is a featured guest star of Spamilton, which just opened this week, which, by the way, opening night, most of the Hamilton cast was there as well. I got to tell you, if you haven't seen it, rave reviews here in Chicago, incredible, with compliments from our critic, Chris Jones, who said these guys have the voices that could actually have them in Hamilton itself, which is so important here. I just thought I'd mention it. So when Christine Petty takes the stage, just let her know we love her work here. It's thrilling to see her here.
Yes, my Julie Diva is going to be with me on stage. And I saw Spamilton opening night in New York. I'm really excited that now it's in Chicago. And I'm excited that Christine Petty's taking an extra day past her run of Spamilton in order to do our Concert for America. So bravo out to my Diva.
So perfect. And check out a previous last week's version of the podcast, by the way, Seth, had the cast of Spamilton with it, and its creator, Gerard, was on there. Anyway, I want people to know that they should not miss this. And you know what? If you don't have a lot of money, I mean, you can spend as much as about $100 for tickets, but there is as little as $18. And for $18, not even $20, to see the talent, the roster of talent I've been talking about, and if you're an on-Broadway fan on Sirius, I mean, just seeing Seth and James and is amazing itself, but just to see the legend that Sharon Glass is. I just can't wait. And so Ticketmaster.com, it's going to be at the Auditorium Theater. It's Monday night at 8 o'clock. I change plans. I get off the air at 6 o'clock, and I'm getting over there to be sure that I'm not going to miss it. And I am going to get up on stage and sing, whether you want me to or not. So be prepared for that. Just have security.
Me too.
So with my thanks to Seth and James and Sharon, I hope I'll get to say hi to you that night. But thank you for doing what you're doing and for this incredible Concert for America. We're going to go out playing a little bit of What the World Needs Now, which was another charitable endeavor of Seth and James. And Sharon, for you guys, thank you so much. You're fabulous. I'll see you Monday.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone.
Lord, we don't need another mountain.
There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb.
There are oceans and rivers
enough to cross.
Enough to last.
Enough to last till the end of time.
Well, it's another week, and so more action in the Trump administration. Never a dull day. Certainly never a dull week goes by where you just kind of say, whew, nothing going on this week. This week, we had introduced to us the Affordable Health Care Bill. Well, we actually saw that previously, but what, of course, is the Congressional Budget Office that gave its projections, what it thinks the impact is going to be, and Republicans not happy with what they're seeing and finding ways to avoid the conclusions of the report. Let's dig into a little bit, and let's dig into just how serious is this healthcare crisis we're in. Joining me is one of my favorite guests, Professor Philip Beverly from Chicago State University, professor of political science there. You see him often on my Politics Tonight show, and now we get him once again on the podcast. Philip, welcome back. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Paul.
So the report comes out, and, you know, it seems that they go, of course, Speaker Paul Ryan, he says he exceeded his expectations. I'm not sure what that means, but what was your take when you see the report? Obviously not good, because Republicans say, don't look over here, look over there. Don't pay no attention to that report.
Yeah, the CBO is a really interesting office, and I'm surprised that the Republican House members were so adamantly trying to downplay those numbers. But you know, they picked the leadership of the CBO, and they tend to be pretty nonpartisan. I know one of the areas that they were talking about, well, you know, the CBO missed on the Obamacare numbers back in 2009, and I think that was only because their model was good, but they had some assumptions about some states that would have participated in Medicaid differently that didn't, and so that's why the numbers were off. But their modeling tends to be pretty accurate. I think that they're just playing polyrazmataz here. Don't look at what we're actually doing. And what they're actually doing is putting at risk about 25 million, 26 million Americans not having health care coverage, which becomes not just a health care problem for those who would not be insured, but it becomes a problem for everybody else because somebody's going to pay for it. And if we return to the days of showing up at an emergency room, that's going to be horrible. That just drives health care costs up higher than ever, and it has, you know, sort of a ripple effect into the rest of the microeconomy of healthcare.
Indeed, and we'll talk about this. So the projections include 14 million people being 14 million fewer people having healthcare within a few years than would have it under Obamacare, and that number gets to over 50 million over the period of like the next 10 years. But here's what I find interesting. So Tom Price, Secretary of Health, says, you know what, we can't rely on those numbers, et cetera, except the guy who runs that budget office is Price's pick. It's his guy. It's a Republican pick. So how do you, and by the way, we also know from various reports that the numbers done by the separate study the White House conducted, they did their own thing. They weren't going to rely on the budget numbers. And their report is actually worse than the budget office. There is nowhere to look that's good. So how do you make lemonade out of this? And my point is, if these numbers, you can say they're fake all you want, but if they're not, if you're a Republican getting ready to run in 2018 for re-election, is your hope simply that the pain won't be felt by that? Because a lot of the subsidies don't get pulled out until after those 2018 midterm elections. That's by design, my friend.
Right. And the interesting thing about that is they're still going to put somebody at risk politically, and it's either going to be House Republicans in the 2018 election cycle or a very unpopular president in the 2020 election cycle. Because the folks are going to be looking at somebody's got to be to blame for this. And if it's not going to be the House Republicans because they carefully crafted the timing on this to work out to their advantage, that's fine. But somebody's going to pay.
It also appears as they look at the numbers that, while the numbers may go out, they're talking about there's going to be a reduction in the deficit, and that's wonderful, $335 billion. Oh, it's not like you're talking about $1 trillion. I mean, you know, over 10 years, $335 billion. And, of course, the reason is, well, yeah, you're not losing so much money because people don't have insurance. The people aren't paying into the system.
Right.
The deficit's coming down. But the other thing is, Philip, it's not as though the costs aren't being paid. What they're doing, correct me if I'm wrong, they're shifting the burden, especially in the world of Medicaid, in the world of Medicaid. They're just shifting it to the states. So governors and budgets in each state, welcome to Illinois on that one, are going to have to pick it up. It's not that the money won't be paid. They're going to have the states pay it, so it makes the federal budget look good, but it's still got to be paid.
Right, and that's going to be painful for states. We've somewhat recovered in most states from the 2008-2009 Great Recession. Illinois hasn't for any number of reasons, but other states at the next economic downturn are going to have this issue to deal with, and it's not going to be pleasant for them.
So what do you do? I mean, let's take off, you know, the political hat you might be wearing and just say, look, we're in this situation. Obamacare certainly needs to be fixed. And there are certainly many Democrats who would have said, look, just repair. For a while, some Republicans even said repair. But it seems as though politically they can't do it. How do you get out of this mess? Is there any way to do repair but somehow convince people, no, it's really Trump care, it's not Obama, but essentially, because they're trying to keep the good parts. They're keeping the pre-existing conditions coverage. They're keeping the live at home till you're 26. They're keeping the no caps on the that stuff is not free.
No, it's going to cost. And I guess I'm being somewhat partisan here, but I would hope that we could rely on Senate Republicans who should be sort of looking at the longer-term implications of all of these issues and really put the brakes on the House Republicans here, because the House Republicans seem to be so wrapped up in the repeal part and less on sound replacement that's very frightening to me. So I'm hopeful that the Senate Republicans say, okay, just slow down. We'll make this politically palatable so that they win for both themselves, you know, ideologically, and for the American people. Because I think it's so much harder to take something back once you've sort of given it, and that's what this looks like.
Well, and it sounds like they're trying to take it back without making it look that way. Like, you still get these things that you like. So if this change should go through, and obviously there will be modifications, already reports, Mitch McConnell saying, oh, we're going to make changes to this thing. But there's a fundamental piece of this that they're, you know, they talk about these three phases, right? We're going to phase one. Don't get mad right now. There's phase two and phase three coming. Although I do believe Senator Tom Cotton has said that's not true. There is no three-phase process. That is political hyperbole. That's really interesting. That being said, you know, if they go through all this repeal, basically saying, hang in there, we're working on this, more is coming, it doesn't work that way either, right? I mean, you have people falling off the rails. You can't promise them something a couple of years from now.
No, because so much can change in between. And then the one thing that I understand the Republican sort of market-driven, let-it-be-fixed-by-the-market forces argument, but the market needs some certainty, and the way that they're going about this whole process is creating more uncertainty, and so it works against their argument about let the market work, which is sort of ironic.
They say premiums are going down. Actually, I found this interesting yesterday. One of the, I think it was Tom Price, he came out and right after it got released, they obviously hadn't read very much and said, oh, premiums are coming down. Well, that's not what the report says. The report says premiums are going to go up for the next 10 years. And then in 10 years, they'll start to come down. But they're going to start to come down from that upper, higher place.
Right.
My question for you is, I'm just trying to still figure out, when you keep all of these benefits in there, they're shifting the way they calculate the benefits for people. No longer is it going to be based on income, meaning rich people pay more and people of need pay less. It's going to be based on age. So if you are older, you're going to pay more because you are more risk in the system. I get that. But they're creating a system that's just going to leave older people, sick people. They're just getting dumped to the sides on this because they won't be able to afford coverage.
Yeah, the thing that I thought was politically sort of suicidal is you're going to now put older people at risk who tend to be people who vote. That I didn't get. I that didn't make sense to me. I mean, you're just going to empower organizations like AARP to get their membership all ginned up to say whether it be true or not for that particular demographic, you're going to get screwed by this. And why would you even go there? I can't understand what their thinking is on that.
Well, it's why, Philip, it's why I asked the question, because, and I'll tell you why, because for 6 years they've been talking about repealing it, knowing that it was never going to happen. It's easier to say it. Well, guess what? They're like the dog that caught the car. They've got it, and now they don't know what to do with it. So, I mean, do you really think there's a sense, is there any chance that at some point Paul Ryan's out is to say, we tried it, we tried to fix it, we can't get agreement, the Democrats are blocking us, we need them to pass, which they do, they need them to pass something with 60 votes, we can repeal it without Democrats, but we can't replace it without Democrats, blame it on the Democrats and say, now you're stuck with it, and here's the thing, then refuse to repair Obamacare so that it really does fall under its own weight in the coming years, because without some fixes, it might.
Well, I think that the argument that they'll have to deal with then is that they did nothing. And that's what they're going to be painted as. The Democrats are going to say, see, they made all these promises and then they did nothing. You can't trust them. And so they have to do something. They literally have to do something. I thought that they would have actually done something that would have benefited them by appealing to the voter in a way that says, yeah, we actually did fix this in the way that it needed to be fixed, right? And they're not going to do that. And so it's like, well, why? You would get the win. You don't need the Democrats in that way if you had something sound, or you back them into a corner to say, if you don't support us fixing Obamacare in a good way, what good are you? it just seems they're too caught up in their ideological rhetoric from the last few years about repeal Obamacare and not having a really sound plan once that happened. I mean, they've had years to come up with a plan, years to come up with a larger plan and bigger overarching Trump care, if you will, or to fix the deficits in Obamacare, and they've done nothing.
Let me switch topics just for a little. Well, actually, one more question. Put your crystal ball hat on here, crystal ball, all your crystal, or your hat, whatever you want. What happens? Do we end up with Obamacare, and that's just where this ends up? Do we end up with a repeal and replace that creates a disaster for the country because they've got the votes to do it? Where do you think this ultimately ends up as the political scientist and academician you are?
I think that they're going to find a way to politically repeal it, not necessarily statutorily repeal it. But they'll get the political win.
How do you do that? What does that mean?
Of some kind of vote. Well, they'll put in a long delay and try and convince people that, oh, don't worry, it'll be fixed later. They'll do what we've done, what Congresses have done with the budget and the national debt and the deficit. You know, they'll just kick the can down the road. But they'll have some big, you know, hoopla about we repealed it, and we honored our promise.
And so the 45% of Trump supporters out there will simply accept that and say, yes, President Trump kept his word.
Right, because they need a win. And if he gets his win by just keeping his word on that, those Trump supporters will be happy because they just need a win. Because they're not looking at the intricacies of you know, how complex this is as a policy question.
Right.
I mean, I was really taken aback when the president of the United States didn't know how complicated this was. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. Somebody had to tell you this is not a 10-second soundbite. This is a very complex issue. So,
well, the president said last week nobody knew how complex this was. I'm thinking, no, actually most people did know.
Yeah, yeah. People who've been paying attention for the last, 25 years did know.
Well, we're going to see what happens, and we will stay in touch with you as it goes. Professor Philip Beverly of Chicago State University, thank you, my friend, as always. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Paul. Have a good day.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.